This is Franz. Welcome back to Sailing in the Mediterranean podcast. In the last few episodes, I've been covering my summer sail, which took me from Croatia down through Montenegro, where I had a lot of mechanical problems. We dealt with them. Basically, they were water pump problems. Also, I had problems with my battery holding a charge, so I had to replace that this summer. And the other one I haven't mentioned, but I'm going to have to be dealing with that next summer, is my windlass has quit showing any power. I can barely get it to pull up an anchor if I'm up there helping it. So I'm going to have to be dealing with that issue next summer when I go back. Also, I need to replace my bowsprit. I have some dry rot in my bowsprit, so I'm going to be replacing that next summer, as well as my other exterior woodwork, which is my boomkin on my boat. That one's okay, but if I'm replacing one piece of structural wood on the boat, I'm going to replace the other as well. Other than that, for a boat that's well over 20 years old, it's in an amazingly good condition. So I shouldn't complain when I have a few mechanical problems along the way. Boats are always prone to having mechanical problems, and I always tell people if they don't want to tinker around, if they don't like fixing trouble or problem solving, don't bother getting a boat. If you have to pay for everything you have to get done on a boat, you'll be out of money in no time at all. Now, I built this boat myself, and in the next podcast, I might talk a little bit about that, but I'm going to move on to the other things I wanted to talk about today. Last week when I talked about sailing from Poros, and we ended up in Astapalea, I did mention that we had stayed in Amagoros, and we had wanted to go east in Amagoros. Well, the island I was trying to get to, and I couldn't remember the name of, is called Levitha, L-E-V-I-T-H-A, Levitha. And it's a tiny little island out there in the middle of nowhere, and a nice, well-protected harbor, but really no city to speak of, just a farmer that lives there. And then they will serve meals to the yachters, the sailboats that come in and anchor in the harbor. And there's also some laid moorings there, probably about four or five laid moorings. But we were not able to go that direction. So we ended up basically going southwest around the corner of Astapalea and down to Amagoros. And at Amagoros, when I left the podcast last week, we had sailed up to a very protected little inlet, I would call it a harbor, on the northeast side of Astapalea. And the name of that harbor is called, I'm looking at a map right now, Exovathi, E-X-O-V-A-T-H-I. Today I'm in the office doing the podcast. Last weekend, I tried to take my little hand recorder out and do a podcast while I was walking around our ranch area, our summer home area, which is up in the Uinta Mountains. It was, by the way, we've had just one of the most gorgeous falls I ever remember in Utah. It's been comfortable weather. Today's the first time we've had any rain for about a month, I think. It's October 12th, 2012. And it's been a delightful fall. The aspen were bright yellow in the mountains, and ranging from a golden red to a bright yellow. There's some amazing shades of color in the mountain this year. But I tried walking around last weekend at the ranch, and there was too much background noise in the form of a breeze that was blowing across my microphone. I'd forgotten my windshield on my microphone. And I just decided I couldn't do that. So I'm in the office, and I'm actually looking at Google Earth as I'm doing this podcast so I can remember the places we went to. So at Exovathi on Astapalea, which is just a delightful anchorage, fully protected, mud bottom, good holding, one little taverna there you can go and get a meal at if you want to. We spent about three or four nights there waiting for the Meltemi to moderate. At this anchorage, when we pulled in, there were 17 other boats already anchored there, and they were the remnants of the Aegean Yacht Rally of 2012. We ended up going to dinner with them, and I don't know if I'll post a YouTube video of dinner there or not, but I have already posted several YouTube videos of the anchorage and the area around. Unfortunately, my white balance was wrong on my camera when I took the video, so a lot of the video is washed out. But you get an idea of the area anyway. When we pulled in and anchored in Exovathi on Astapalaya, we found a nice spot, and right next to us was a large boat, and they all were flying the flags of the Aegean Yacht Rally, and almost all the boats were flying the Turkish flag, with the exception of one motorboat, which was an American motorboat, a Grand Banks 42, I think is what it was. And it was owned by a Japanese individual. His name was Ted. But we got to know this whole group of people because they were going to eat at the taverna. When we walked in there, we started talking to them, and we ended up spending the evening talking to them. This boat next to us had a knocked-out porthole. And the people that were on that boat was a woman by the name of Sophia and her father-in-law named Thassen. And her father-in-law was the father of the manager of the Setter Marinas, which is a big chain of marinas in Turkey called, and his name was Emir Duruk. So we sat down across from Sophia, and we sat next to her father-in-law. They all spoke English very well, and they started telling us the problems they had had with the Aegean Yacht Rally. And I'm going to see if I can get Sophia or Emir to do an interview and talk to us about the yacht rally for last summer, because it was really, and I've mentioned this before, it was really a tough summer as far as winds go. They had mapped out a nice big route, and they started out with a lot of boats, and most of the boats dropped out of the rally due to either mechanical breakdowns or wind conditions. They just didn't enjoy the summer. I did talk to one individual. Actually, it was Ted on the Japanese boat. He had lost two anchors during the yacht rally, and he was down to an anchor that he had borrowed from somebody. So it was a tough year. There's no question about it. It was a tough year. We were holed up in Exovathi for, like I say, 3 or 4 days. And to pass the time, we basically went on long walks. And on one walk, Bud and I started walking up the hill to the west of the little harbor up this road, and went through a lot of goat pastures and farms. And I don't know how they grow anything on some of these islands. The soil is terrible. It's rocky, but a lot of goats. And we went up by a beehive, a bunch of beehives, a whole bunch of beehives. Now, I'm an amateur apiarist. I have 3 beehives of my own, and I can go out and check out my beehives without really any trouble. I can get close to them, right next to them, without any protective equipment on at all. I have very gentle bees. And so I thought, there's 2 men were working on the beehives, and they were all covered up. They were fully clothed, and I wasn't really too worried about bees because I'm around them all the time. So I just sort of started wandering over a little closer to get a little better idea. I wasn't going to walk right up to the beehives because they were working on them. But as soon as I started walking up to them, one of the beekeepers looked at me and jumped up and ran towards me and said, "Get back, get back, get back," in Greek, of course. And so I did. I backed up, and suddenly there's a lot of swarming of bees around me. And these bees were very aggressive, very, very aggressive. There must be some Africanization of these honeybees, or they're just not as content as mine are in Utah. But they were very aggressive bees. I didn't get stung, but I stayed a long distance away from them after that. And I got some pictures of the beehives. I noticed they're all painted blue in Greece. In the United States, most of them are painted white. Just a cultural thing, I think, more than anything else. We finally left Astapalaya and sailed on a tight beat. It was still pretty bumpy out there, but not too bad. On a tight beat over to Kalymnos. And when I was in Amagoros, The boat next to me was a Turkish gentleman as well, and he had a fishing line, a fishing pole hanging off the back of his boat. Now, I've dragged lines through the Mediterranean off and on over the years, and I've never caught anything, so I was skeptical of ever catching anything. So I asked him, I said, "Hey, do you ever catch anything on that?" And he said, "Oh, yeah, all the time, all the time." I said, "Really?" And he said, "Yeah, we use this lure here, and it works really well." And he went down below and gave me one of his lures. He said, "Here, try this. If you ever get a chance, try this." So when we left Ostapalaya en route to Kalmyndos, about halfway across, I thought, well, I ought to throw a line out and see if I catch anything. So as we were coming around the southern end of Kalmyndos, I thought, well, I better pull in my line because we're going to be coming into harbor pretty soon, and I wanted to get it in. And as I pulled it in, by gosh, there was a nice-sized tuna that I'd been dragging for who knows how long on that line. So I pulled it in, and we had him for supper. That was the only fish I caught last summer. I did try to drag a line another couple days, and I didn't have any luck. But at least I did catch a fish. There are fish in the Mediterranean. It hasn't been totally fished out yet. It's not like South Pacific or the Caribbean, where you jump in the water and you see marine life everywhere. It's beautiful water, but not a lot of life underneath that you get to see. So in Kalmyndos, Bud was going to be leaving in a couple days, and my final crew was going to join me. But we had a few days, so we spent a day or two in Kalmyndos, and then we took a day and we sailed up to Liros, and we stayed at a little beautiful, beautiful little port called, what's the name of it? Pandeli. It's on the east side of Liros, probably about two-thirds of the way up. We dropped our anchor out in sand and backed in and tied to the shore. And it was, actually, I guess I'm looking at the Google Earth. It's about halfway up on Liros. And it was a beautiful, beautiful little anchorage, very quiet, very clear water, some of the clearest water I saw last summer, comfortable. A lot of boats were there, so we were late to the party, but we found a nice spot to back into. And we went out to supper that night in the little town there. We talked to some of the people. The Olympics were going on, so we went to town and found a little taverna that had a TV on, and we were watching the Olympics there. And the next day, we got up and slow, lazily got up and took our lines in and headed south. And we went south back to Kalmyndos, but this time we went around the west side of the island, and we're really just sort of poking in every little nook and cranny we felt like. We stopped into a little village called Emporos. And if I go back again, I think I'll go back in that area and drop an anchor because it looked like a nice, protected, secure anchorage as well. A couple little bays there that had some nice, nice anchorages, and I'll probably go back there and spend some time there maybe next year. Then we sailed back down to the town of Kalmyndos on the south end of the island of Kalmyndos, and Bud caught a ferry over to Kosh, and he flew out of Kosh. We talked about sailing over there, but we decided, hey, it's just easier because my next crew is going to join me in Kalmyndos, so I would have had to take him over to Kosh and then come back, and we decided it was just made more sense for him to catch a ferry across, and the ferry would take him closer to the airport anyway. So he took a ferry across and caught his flight out. Had a great time with Bud. Bud's a great sailor. I don't need to worry about it. If I want to take some time off, he knows what to do. He knows how to keep a watch, so it's always nice to have that. My final crew was one of my clients, Rick and his father. And Rick had sailed with me years before when we sailed from Lavrion, which is fairly close to the Athens airport. We sailed from Lavrion down to the island of Chia and then to the island of Zakynthos, excuse me. We sailed from the island of Chia and then down to the island of Kythnos and then Syros and then Mykonos, and they got off. And then we sailed from Mykonos all the way down to Santorini. So he was on the boat before. He was comfortable with the boat. He was he's a lawyer, a bankruptcy attorney. I'm not sure exactly what specialty he is. He may be I know he deals with banks a lot. It may not be bankruptcy. It may be transactional work he does. But anyway, he brought his father, and his father was fairly old, and his father was not very mobile. He had bad knees, and it was difficult getting him on and off the boat. And since then, his father's come back, and he's getting a full, one or two full knee replacements, so he should be more mobile in the future. I think in the future, I will make sure that my guests are able to walk unaided at least 3 miles, because if you can't do that, I really don't want to worry about trying to get people on and off the boat. It's dangerous for them. It puts stress on me because I'm worried about the safety of my customers, my clients, my guests on the boat. And so I think in the future I'll just make sure we have some minimum physical standards that people have to meet up to before they join me. But anyway, they joined me on the boat in Kalymnos, and then we cleared out of Greece and sailed over to Turkey to clear in. Along the way, we got a late start, unfortunately. We cleared out fairly late. So along the way, we did drop our anchor. We didn't go ashore, but we did drop our anchor on the south tip of a little island called Pseremos, Pseremos. Had a fairly rolly anchorage that night, but the next morning we continued on our way. We went over to the town of Tugatres on the Bodrum Peninsula. And cleared in. Now, clearing in Tugatres was fairly straightforward. Brand new, I shouldn't say brand new, it's a marina that's probably about 10 years old, well-maintained, well-organized, very clean, modern marina. Pulled in there, tied up, went to the marina office. They gave me my papers for clearing in. I walked back to the customs office, cleared in, and then we were out of there. Pure and simple. Filled up fuel there. Unfortunately, I should have filled up fuel in Greece. It's cheaper to fill up your fuel tank in Greece than Turkey. I think Turkey's probably one of the most expensive places to fill up fuel. And I don't take that much fuel, but it cost me, I don't know, well over $100, 100 euros to fill it up. And I didn't use that much. We sailed from there up to a little bay called Gumsluk, which is famous for their restaurants. They have a lot of fish restaurants there. The last time I was there, it was delightful, just delightful, but it was very crowded when we were there this summer. We were able to find a spot after going around and around and around in circles. We finally found a spot to drop our anchor, and we held pretty close, but it was very tight anchoring in that area. And then the next day, we had a slow, leisurely, into-the-wind sail. So we were heeled over back and forth. We were tacking back and forth. We didn't have that far to go, so I thought, let's just play around and sail. And we sailed up to Yalakavik and anchored there for the night. Took a bus into the little town and had dinner there, and then came back to the boat. And then basically it was back to Bodrum. And we spent a night in a little bay to the west of Bodrum town called Gumbet, G-U-M-B-E-T. And I'd anchored here years before, and I remembered it as being a delightful little anchorage. Well, the real estate development in Turkey has gone insane, absolutely insane. Everywhere you look, there's these ugly little sugar cube cabanas or houses or condominiums or whatever you want to call them, but they're built everywhere. And they're identical, and they, like Spain ruined its coast by building these ugly big concrete boxes, it looks like Turkey, at least around the Bodrum area, is ruining its coast by building these, what I call, sugar cube boxes. And I saw it all the way from pretty much Yalakavik, all the way around the coast to Bodrum. And I just get the feeling when I look at this and I see this insane real estate development that they're setting themselves up for a bust in real estate prices. I've seen this before. There's this mad dash to build and build and build, and everywhere I went in Bodrum, there were banks everywhere. Banks, 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 everywhere. I stood on one corner and saw five different banks. It looks to me like they're creating a credit bubble in Turkey, and I wouldn't invest you know, with, I wouldn't touch that investment right now. I didn't, one place when we were up in Yalakovic, we looked at one of these developments, brand new development, went way up a hill, and at night there was not a single light on. So a lot of construction, and I don't know how well these are selling. I have a suspicion, a strong suspicion, that not many of these condominiums or apartments or whatever they're building are selling. You know how a real estate developer will build until he can't get any money anymore. And as long as they're getting their money, they're building. Anyway, we left. We pulled my boat out in Bodrum. One thing I mentioned, it'd been 3 years since I'd been back to Turkey. And when I cleared in, I had some money that I'd taken with me from Turkey. I always like to have a little bit of currency with me when I arrive at a country. And when I'd left Turkey the last time, I took some Turkish lira with me, some YTL, some Turkish lira. And when I got back into the country, they said, okay, it's going to cost 80 Turkish lira. So I pulled out my wad of lira that I had from my previous trip, and they said, oh, no, that money's no good. That money's no good. I said, what? They said, no, they changed the currency. Now, this is twice. Since I've been in Turkey, this has been twice. They went from the Turkish lira, when it was about a million lira to the dollar, to one lira to the dollar. So that's what you call a readjustment of the currency. And then they took the YTL, the new Turkish lira, and turned it into another Turkish lira. So all those lira that I'd taken with me were no longer good. Fortunately, I when I was putting the boat up, I asked Rick, I said, Rick, will you take this money back to a bank and see if they can exchange it? And he did. He went to a bank and they exchanged it for the new money. So I didn't lose that money. But it was a big headache. I've learned my lesson. No longer will I take any Turkish lira out of the country. From now on, I spend every lira I have, and I will just get new lira when I get back. You fool me once, okay. Fool me twice, no. It's not going to happen again. So my advice is, if you're going to Turkey, or actually pretty much most countries now, I'm highly suspicious of the currencies. It's not like the dollar's not devaluing either, but it's... at least they're not changing the currency to the point where I can't use the old dollars yet. So that's pretty much the end of the summer. I put the boat up. I had the oil changed. A few other odds and ends were taken care of. I have a lot of work to do on the boat when I get back. And my plans are next summer. I'm already starting to plan out next summer's trip. And I have to make a decision whether I want to go north or south. I haven't seen the far northern coast of Greece. I'm not sure what those islands are called, but the northern islands of Greece and the peninsulas that come out of the area around Thessaloniki. I'd like to get up there. I've been to Lesbos, but I haven't been to some of the other islands there north in that area. And I'd like to also go south. So it really sort of depends on what the weather is like next summer when I get back on the boat, which direction I'm going to go. I've been as far south as Rhodes. But there's a couple islands down south that I haven't seen, and one is Karpathos and then Kassos, which is just south of Karpathos. And Kassos is very famous because, well, I shouldn't say very famous, it's famous to me because some very prominent Greek ship owners come from the island of Kassos, the Koulikoundis family and a few others. And there's a book called The Feasts of Memory written by Elias Koulikoundis, which is just a wonderful book to read. If you get a chance, pick that book up. You can get it at Amazon. And I may put a link in it in my show notes and on my website because that's a great book to read. I met Elias Koulikoundis when I went to a shipping conference in New York City at the Metropolitan Club a few years ago, and I interviewed him when I was working on my master's degree in geography because I was studying the Greek shipping industry. But Kassos is a little island where these families come from, but one of the interesting things is there's really not even a harbor on the island of Kassos. But that's where his family is. Of course, they haven't lived there for generations, but that's where they started out their shipping families, their shipping empires. So, and then Crete. A lot of Cretans live in Utah. A lot of the Greeks that live in Utah came from the island of Crete, primarily because I think they were miners. There's a lot of mines in Crete, and they came over and worked the coal mines in Utah and the other mines in Utah. I've never been there. A lot of my friends' family's heritage is from there, and it might be interesting to visit Crete. So if I go south, I'll probably do Rhodes, Karpathos, Kassos, Crete, and I may do a big circle. There's a couple other islands that I might visit, and go to the southern end of the Peloponnese, Kirthia. I might visit and then do the southern end, and again, then go back by way of Milos and Santorini and so forth. We'll see, just in the planning stages. And it's fun in the winter to start planning out your routes and how many days I'm going to be out and where my new crews will meet me and so forth. Anyway, with that out of the way, I appreciate you listening. Hope it hasn't been too boring. I'll try to get some good people to interview. If you have any suggestions for people that would be interesting to talk to, or if you have some stories to tell yourself, if you're a sailor and you've sailed in the Mediterranean, I'd like to interview you or talk to you. If you're a charter base operator, I'd like to talk to you. I do put a lot of YouTube videos up. They're very amateurish. I haven't edited them at all. I really don't have the software to edit them, but I made a lot of videos of the various places I stopped in last summer, and I've been throwing them up little by little onto YouTube and linking them onto my website. If you want to, go take a look at those. I always welcome comments. Easiest way to send a comment is email me directly, and it's Franz, F-R-A-N-Z, at medsailor.com, medsailor.com. I appreciate you listening, and I hope to get another one of these out next week.